Hello, hello. Welcome back or welcome to the Life Without Limits podcast. I'm your host, Yogi Roth. Thanks for joining us and thanks for sharing, rating, subscribing, reviewing, all the good things. You do that on iTunes or whatever podcast player of your choice you listen to. It always helps this podcast, this conversation get out. So thank you very much for the support. This conversation is different than any one that we've had in our three seasons of this podcast. This is a recording from a panel that I was a part of at the South by Southwest conference. If you're not familiar with South by Southwest, it's kind of the premier conference where tech meets music, meets film, meets just powerful conversations. And I was there a year ago as the brand Protector launched, which is really one of the more unique brands in the country regarding sport, culture, and sexual violence. It was founded by a close friend of mine, somebody I consider family, Alexis Jones, a couple years ago after she spoke to the Elite 11 quarterbacks. The Elite 11 quarterbacks are the top players of their position in high school every year. And every year we try to teach them, of course, football, but also beyond the X's and O's. Well, we wanted to talk about manhood because the amount of sexual assaults and sexual violence that were happening on college campuses, it just became at least more talked about. It probably has always been happening. When you look at the numbers, they're staggering. 1 in 5 women on average will be sexually assaulted in their college career. I mean, that stat in and of itself will stop you right in your tracks. So we said, you know, instead of talking to the quarterbacks from a male perspective, let's bring in a female in. Let's bring in an expert in on women. And that's what Alexis Jones is. Alexis Jones started a company called I Am That Girl over a decade ago. And now that organization about women empowerment and women asking questions and understanding about themselves, their body, their community, men, is grown to over 1 million members in over 20 countries around the globe. So safe to say Alexis knows what she's talking about. And she came in, I'll never forget it, and talked to the top 24 quarterbacks in the country that year, and she blew them away. And she's come back every single year and really impacted, you know, the alphas that go back to their high school and then to their college and then potentially the NFL or into the corporate world or into their life after their playing career. And we know that they've got a loud voice and a platform to create some change around that statistic and around that thought. So the general concept around Protector is, you know, redefining manhood one locker room at a time. And we believe, you know, at Protector that athletes can be the cure to ending sexual violence versus the problem. So cut to the South by Southwest conference. And that's when I had a chance to sit down with Alexis, who moderates this conversation, along with Claire Graff of the National Football League. She's the Senior Director of Social Responsibility and Civic Communication. So right in the middle of the good, the bad, the ugly, that's where Claire is, an expert in her field around what's going on in the league, specifically around this issue of masculinity in sports. Brad Buckman, he was a former high school All-American basketball player, went to the Texas Longhorns, led them to the Final Four, started for 4 years there, and then was a 9-year professional basketball player in the U.S., and overseas. So he's been in locker rooms and myself. You know, obviously, as a broadcaster, I'm in locker rooms every single week talking to student athletes at a variety of levels from high school to college to the National Football League and beyond. So I think I have a good handle of what's going on in that space. And we just dove in. It's a live audience. It's a blast. It was a great crowd. And we really just wanted to talk about redefining masculinity because it's not the old adage or the old thought when I was playing or your dad was playing or you were playing. It's changed. Athletes have changed. Their mentalities have changed. And we didn't pull any punches. So this is a very point-blank conversation with experts in Claire, Brad, Alexis, and myself, and a really unique opportunity for us to talk about. You also hear a little bit from Sarah Hirsch-Bordeaux. She directed the film Protector. So if you don't know about Protector, go to protector.com. Learn about Alexis. Learn about the work they're doing because for me, it's an absolute honor and a gift to be a part of these conversations as it continues to go in a variety of colleges across the country. I'm really excited that the first college to really embark on this is the University of Washington. Not surprised with Chris Peterson being the leader of that institution, along with Jen Cohen, their athletic director. So colleges are looking at this platform and saying, hey, we need this education to give it to our student athletes so they can really learn about redefining the locker room, masculinity, and making sure that they don't just impact the playing field, but impact the field of life in a variety of different areas. So this conversation was a blast. Hope you enjoy it. Sit back. It's a little different. It's a panel. You hear some Q&A from the audience, but I thought it was a powerful one, and I wanted to share it. Enjoy.
Amazing. We're so happy to have you. I think we were kind of just chatting outside for a little bit and saying that, truthfully, this is a really provocative conversation that we're excited to have. We're really passionate specifically about talking about solutions. especially around the Me Too movement, the Time's Up movement. We're so grateful that there has been an opportunity for survivors to come forward in a space which realistically, historically, has never existed before. A space where survivors are able to come forward and feel like they can share their stories, are courageous enough, but also that there's actual accountability on the other side of that. So incredibly grateful for Me Too and Time's Up. And that being said, we're also fiercely passionate about talking about solutions and progress and what do we do now. So we know that there's a problem. We know that violence against women has existed since 5th century BC. So none of this is novel to us, but really this conversation and the caliber of humans that I get to share this stage with is really kind of the opportunity to say, like, so what now? And what does progress look like? And what does hard accountability look like mixed with radical grace? And how are we patient long enough to understand that cultural change and cultural shifts take decades, that this isn't going away anytime soon, and rehabilitation and forgiveness and all of the things necessary in order for us to push the conversation forward. And specifically on this stage, we also get to talk about how do we use sports as a vehicle to do that. Being able to identify that kind of the biggest and the baddest athletes on high school and college campuses who are really kind of setting the trend of what manhood looks like, if we are in fact taking the cultural script away from men and saying that this behavior hasn't worked up until now, what is the new cultural script that we're giving them? And how do we do that with grace and empathy and most importantly, make men feel like they're radically included in this conversation? The first thing I always say is that this men are often talked about like you're the problem. And at least us sitting up here, we also believe that you're the cure. So it is an invitation for incredible men to participate and for the women who have been fighting in the trenches their whole lives of really kind of deciding that this is a human movement and requires all of us. So that being said, I'm just going to allow everyone to kind of introduce themselves, and how we're going to rock and roll with this is after intros, we'll do a couple questions. And then truthfully, because you're here and you have a thousand different things that you could be at, I think I'm most interested selfishly in why you're here and really opening it up to a discussion. So that's how we're going to kind of rock and roll. Claire, if you'll introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. I may be the one person here who's never been to Austin before, so I like it so far. It's a little warmer than I thought.
The one day.
Yeah. I'm in my New York black here. I work at the NFL. I'm the senior director of social responsibility and civic communications, which is a title we made up along the way. But I've been there for 11 years. I started working on the public relations side of the house, and over the course of time became a de facto member of our community relations department. And then Ray Rice happened, and we realized that we needed more than a community relations department. We needed to put our stake in the ground around a number of different social issues. So we broadened the department to social responsibility. And now I wear both hats. I work in social responsibility on issues around domestic violence, sexual assault, DUI, and more recently social justice. And I also do PR around those issues as well. So I'm really glad to be here. We've worked with a number of amazing organizations and certainly are really impressed by everything Alexis does and her work. So really happy to be here today with all of you guys.
And what she failed to mention is she's also a badass mom of two kiddos, a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old. So thank you for being an epic mom.
I'm Brad Buckman. I'm the chief support officer of this woman right here. Born and raised in Austin, went to University of Texas, played Division I basketball from 02 to 06, and then played internationally in Europe for almost 9 years. So I've been in a few locker rooms in my life. So I kind of understand the culture of where we are at today, or where we are today, and what we have to do to help our young athletes move forward. So I've been around her for my entire life, known her since I was 10 years old. So from afar, I kind of watched her grow as an individual and as an ambassador and as a world changer. So it was easy for me to jump on board because I knew her energy and I knew where she was going. So I'm trying to support as much as I can.
He's also my husband, so there's that. Like, we're dancing husband. Around the fact that he's like chief supporting officer and he sleeps with the enemy.
Yeah, that's true.
So grateful for this one. And in all seriousness, he was the first investor of Protect Her, which I'll kind of dive into. Alexis Jones. I founded a nonprofit called I Am That Girl right out of graduate school. I left Texas. My poor father in the back is still angry about it. He just panicked. He was like mid speaking. So I did my undergrad and master's at USC and created I Am That Girl, which is what we refer to as a badass version of Girl Scouts for college girls. We have about 1.2 million girls involved now. We just opened a chapter in our 24th country. So I think for me, understanding the urgency of sexual harassment, sexual assault within the group and community that I serve, I had a completely different level of urgency around it because that was my everyday, was these emails and conversations with young girls and what they're struggling with on a regular basis. Given the opportunity, which I'm so excited for Yogues to do his intro, he actually gave me the invite with Elite 11, which is basically the preeminent football high school quarterback, would you say, boot camp? And it's filmed at Nike, and ESPN is a big partner with them. And he called me and he said, will you come and give a talk to the top 18 quarterbacks in the country on the importance of respecting women? So basically all my work, having worked directly A to B to girls, was all of a sudden kind of this invitation of like, sure, you want me to talk to dudes? But why don't you ask some dude? And he was like, no, I actually think the conversation needs to come from a girl. So I came in and I gave this talk, and interestingly enough, Claire, a week after that aired, Everything with Ray Rice came out. So for me, I mean, we both had an interesting professional pivot, right? Because in that moment, all of a sudden, I was that girl in the locker room having these tough love conversations with young men on the importance of respecting women. And what ended up kind of growing out of that was an opportunity to build Protect Her, which was the first ever educational program for male athletes on the importance of respecting women, in which case Brad was my first investor. So not only my husband, but also my business partner on this. So it's really exciting to see all of this kind of, I don't want to say it's exciting to see the culture where we're at. It's terrifying, but certainly the opportunity to best serve it. Yogues.
Well, thanks for having me, first and foremost. My name is Yogi Roth, and purposely for me, I'm seeking to uncover the humanity in sports in everything that I do. I do it as a sportscaster for the Pac-12 networks. I do it as a filmmaker with the Elite 11, and I do it as a traveler. Alexis and I met at college at USC, and since that day, I was coaching the Trojans at the time and can tell the influence that coaches had. And I truly believe that coaches coach coaches, and that is one of the biggest missing links in all of sports currently today, because that's how we're going to influence the next generation of leaders and thought leaders and doers and young men that will protect the women that I believe they need to do and that women are asking them to do. So when Alexis asked me to join on, we joined up with filmmaker Sarah Bordeaux, who's in the front row. Give her a round of applause. Yeah. And we found that we were talking about a subject that everybody wanted to talk about, but nobody knew how to talk about. And if you know Alexis at all, or just do a quick Google search, you know that she doesn't pull any punches. She's going to walk right in the room and get right to the truth of it. And that, to us, as a coaching staff, myself and Trent Dilfer, Super Bowl-winning quarterback, we're the guys that kind of run an element of the off-the-field portion of Elite 11. We're like, let's bring in somebody like Alexis. And she tore the house down. And I'm talking about quarterbacks that were in that room are now first-round draft picks. Jared Goff, Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Kizer, Cody Kessler, all the names that are now populating the NFL have pretty much heard Alexis's talk. They've either come back as a counselor. This year, Sam Darnold, Josh Rose in the top, you know, two of the top three quarterbacks in the draft are extremely familiar with Alexis. I'd say 90% of the coaches, if not 100% of the coaches in major college football, are familiar with Alexis. So I think we're just getting started. And being on the stage with you two is an absolute gift because you're the dream that every kid has. And we're going to get into it, but the world shifted. Every kid is a brand now. You know, they're a brand because they have 40,000 Instagram followers before they get to college. And they want to be OBJ, not Larry Fitzgerald, because OBJ is a brand and represented by Nike. And Brad's played overseas in the U.S. I mean, to be on this panel with people that have lived it, breathed it, and are projecting an impact on the next generation is really the purpose of why we even came together a couple of years ago. And since then, Alexis has just gone to crazy levels with what she's done.
Thank you. Do you like how I just basically was like, friends? I just want my friends on a panel with me. And I gave them 20s right before we walked out. And I was like, say nice things about me. So I think kind of from a story standpoint, from an arc, and for us to certainly open this up and so start thinking about your questions. But for me, I want to understand, how did we get here? And so this is kind of first to like two athletes, like Division I athletes, professional athlete, like you grew up in locker rooms. So when anyone talks about locker rooms, I think you have that experiential mix with theoretical knowledge of it. What was it like, a two-part question, what was it like growing up in locker rooms? Has that changed? And or what you're seeing now, because you also work with Coach Smart, you go in, you hang out with the boys at UT, you're certainly commentating, so you're on campuses all over the country. So what, from your experience, what is the difference between you growing up in your own experience of a locker rooms and what you're witnessing today?
I'll let you kind of been in the locker room.
Cool, yeah, it's a great question. I mean, when we were growing up, and even now to a certain degree, athletes are trained to defeat no. All right, I play football at Pitt. They didn't offer me a scholarship. They said I wasn't good enough. All right, I'm going to go prove that I am. Played as a freshman, got a scholarship. You're not good enough to coach at SC. Went and coached at SC. You're not good enough to broadcast ESPN or wherever. Went and did that. So we're programmed to defeat no, and we're celebrated when we defeat no. Who doesn't love the underdog story? The challenge that we found is that athletes are programmed to think this way, and then all of a sudden they're in an intimate moment, and they're told no. And everything that they've been trained, they're not 10,000 hours, I'm talking probably 30, 40,000 hours of training as an elite competitor to even live on the razor's edge. Now you're in this moment being like, no, what do you mean? And then you dive into the social constructs of what was their home life like? Was it a single parent household? Were they trained in the right proper ideals? And if not, they're falling back on what they've trained. And a lot of the young men that I've talked to that have been found guilty of sexual assault, they haven't been given a role model, a la the NFL, to say, hey, I can be this. This is what I want to be. So that's where it began. Where it shifted is beautiful. Look up Chris Peterson. To me, he's a 1%er in major college football, the head coach at the University of Washington right now. They just got Alexis, a program protector, which she's going to dive into. But they understand that they can influence this generation, and they're going to give them the tools. I'm going to coach Brad on his jab step and how to shoot a jump shot. I better damn well coach you on how to respect a woman, let alone how to ask her out, how to ask her to have sex, how to ask her tons of questions. And if we think of it like an athletic mind should, which is malleable and functional and trainable, then they need tools and they need answers. And where Alexis has come in and Sarah's film is offering answers for the first time versus, yeah, dude, just don't be an asshole. Don't be an idiot. Don't be a clown. We don't do that to women. Well, they need tools. They need to be taught, just like they need to be taught how to throw a three-step slant, how to shoot a jump shot off a screen. And that, to me, is where it's changing because of the work that you're doing.
I think for me, growing up in a locker room, you're kind of embarrassed to kind of talk to your teammates because reality, like, you say something wrong or you sound soft, you're going to be made fun of. So it's really hard to open up. And I think what she's trying to provide is an open space for a locker room to be more where a conversation starts and bullying some sort of ends and actually opens up, you know, a brotherhood where you want to better each other. And it was tough. I mean, we all grew up where we would have a talk about sexual domestic violence and we'd have a drill sergeant come up and, or not a drill sergeant, but someone that would yell at you as opposed to actually be warm and opening and inviting and say, you know, I kind of left these conversations being like, am I the problem? I don't think I did anything wrong, but for some reason I feel like I did something wrong. And so she takes it from a different approach where she invites the questions, like, what's wrong with you? What are you dealing with? And I think that's the approach that I think would have better served me because I'm going to listen to someone that can actually want to have a conversation with me, not tell me how I should be. So it's been really awesome to kind of not piggyback, but jump in her backpack every once in a while on a few of her trips and kind of see how collegiate athletes react and respond to her message. And it's shocking to me because when we would have a speaker come, we would never go ask questions like, hey, you know, what do you think about this? Well, I'm dealing with this at home, or my girlfriend, you know, may have this weird situation, and can I talk to you? When an authoritative person like that comes into and talks to you to talk, you don't want to talk to them because you're scared to death of them. But for her, it's like, holy cow, like, let me ask you this. Let's talk about this. And she gives them a hug, and she listens. And she looks at them and listens, and I think that's what these kids need, that there's someone just to listen to them and say they're not wrong. And thank you for asking the question. So it's been kind of interesting and awesome to see that these kids are so receptive to a woman in a locker room.
Speaking of, because Yogues just talked about this idea of role models. And Claire, I think that, you know, and I don't want this to be a leading question, but as a representative on behalf of the NFL, is it frustrating that you have so many good guys who are showing up to work, who are doing a good job, who are awesome dads, who are awesome husbands. And then, of course, like any ecosystem, you have a handful of bad apples. And it almost seems like that's all we ever see as a representative on behalf of the NFL. And for you, what is that experience like? And what are y'all kind of trying to do as far as highlighting those good guys?
My first role when I got to the NFL was solely to publicize the positive off-the-field stories around our players, and it was the hardest job I've had, hands down, because to your point, and I think we all get it, right, that there's a reason you only hear about the plane crashes, not the safe landings. So, yes, it is frustrating for all of us. It's even more frustrating, I think, for the players, and I think they felt that acutely after Ray Rice. The first year that we really started domestic violence and sexual assault education, I think we probably did it a little bit wrong first time out of the gate, because some of the feedback we got was, you're talking to us specifically like we're part of the problem. And we didn't do it consciously. We were taking them through exactly what domestic violence and sexual, we were starting at ground zero because we needed to. But that feedback has really sat with us over the course of the last 4 years as we've evolved, because they are part of the solution. The vast majority of them are incredible people who want the tools to be active bystanders, to know what to say, to struggle with, I saw this situation, I just wasn't sure, the things that we all go through, because that's what really matters at the end of the day. Yes, the reason we got into this situation was because there was a highly publicized incident, but we learned that we and our players are held to a higher standard, and we're going to embrace that rather than run away from it.
Sure, to almost understand kind of the power of the jersey. I think that's something that we've talked about within Elite 11, within these young men, is this idea that there is a different expectation and a different responsibility the minute that you put that jersey on, and in the minute that you get to say, I'm a professional athlete, that with that comes some kind of honor. And one of my brothers is a fireman, and I think that he articulated it really well, which is, you know, when I'm wearing my fireman outfit, when I'm wearing my whatever the outfit is, the uniform, that is like not the going into fire uniform, but he was basically like, whenever I'm in uniform, like dress uniform, girl, thank you. So whenever I'm in this outfit, like, I'm not allowed to be seen drinking while wearing this. I'm not allowed to be seen doing all of these things. And he was like, because that's what it means to be a fireman, right? They've rebranded what it means to be a fireman, aka a real life superhero, because that's what you are, like, when as a fireman. And quite frankly, the way that we put these athletes up on these pedestals in this culture specifically. So how do we imbue that sense of responsibility, that sense of opportunity for them to recognize that they really are real life superheroes? And what are some of the most inspiring partnerships that y'all have done so far? And by the way, I just want to say, like, I think it's awesome that you just prefaced with the fact that, like, we didn't do that right the first time. I think that takes, like, a massive amount of humility. Quite frankly, I think women do it better. But I think it's awesome to be standing on a stage and being like, yeah, we realized it was a problem. We realized maybe it was reactionary, and we didn't even necessarily do it the right and the best way the first time, but we're working on that. So what are some of the inspiring partnerships that y'all are working on, the education side of things?
Well, it's interesting. When we were talking about sort of taking it back and looking at the people, you know, at the age that they are, they're so young. So we took it back even farther and said, forget about male, female, football player or not, let's go to middle schools and let's start working. We work with United Way and EverFi on a character education program that's not about specifically domestic violence and sexual assault. It's about the tools that every junior high kid needs. Conflict resolution. What do you do when there's a situation? And it's graphic novel form. Again, stuff I never would have come up with, but I've seen these kids and they get it. It speaks to them in a way that I'm too old to understand, but I see them. And, you know, when we launched it at Draft in Chicago a couple of years back, and I'll never forget this. It was a draft prospect and I, we were leaning over a kid's shoulder while he was doing it, and we had to explain to him what passive aggressive meant, because that was one of the, have you ever tried to define passive aggressive? I'm an expert at it, but it doesn't mean I know how to. So it was just a really interesting sort of foray into, we take these things for granted as an adult. So that, I think, is one of the most forward-looking things we've done. Forget about if these guys or young women are ever going to have any relationship with us in the future. Let's reach them anyway and help them sort of figure out what their North Star is, regardless of if they ever end up in a locker room or not. Full disclosure, when Alexis asked me to do this panel, I said to you all, I've actually never been in a professional locker room. My last locker room experience was as a field hockey player in high school. But I think teaching people like me and like those middle schoolers those skills that translate no matter where they are is probably the most important sort of forward-looking thing we've done.
Awesome. And I want to get back to it because I think you brought up such an interesting concept around this idea that athletes are specifically programmed to defy the impossible. You're specifically, when you're told no, you are programmed to turn that into a yes. So if it is in fact programming, I think, which is kind of, you know, what we talk about, at least within the context of Protector, if we're talking about there has been some bad programming, and maybe that's just like a wildly hopeless, optimistic perspective, because at least in that perspective, if we think that potentially there has been bad programming for young men, that we could improve and enhance that programming, how do we change that, at least within that arena?
Well, it's an awesome topic. I think there's a couple elements. Number one, the athletes that we put on a pedestal. I think, you know, who's the NFL going to celebrate this year? Who's Nike going to celebrate this year as a partner of the NFL? Those are real discussions. We were at a TED Talk about 6 years ago in this city with a Nike executive who admitted in the 80s their commercials aided elements of urban culture and some violence that occurred with sneakers. Right? I mean, you're changing or you're creating the narrative that is being received. But the beautiful thing now is that the way content is received with the iGen is totally different. There's a great book you should read called Athletes Are Brands Too. The author is Jeremy Darlow. He's with us right now.
That's right.
That's right. And the point is that athletes now, as much as they're looking for someone to tell them stuff, they also have a voice and a platform and are a brand. And the way that athletics is set up is be as loud and as boastful as you want to be up until you're 18 because everyone's showering you because you're the man. You were one of the top recruits in the country. Imagine that now, right? Everyone would be all over you. Then you go to college and it's shut that down because now you're under our umbrella, University of Texas, Southern California, Pitt, whatever it may be. And then go out in the NFL and, oh, by the way, here's $10 million. And now you're a brand, and this brand is supposed to be rolling. This brand is supposed to be X, Y, and Z. So the point I referenced Jeremy for is that I think athletes need constructs and rules and guidance around their voice. I talk to student athletes every week. I just came from Las Vegas this morning. I was there for the Pac-12 basketball tournament. Some of the top upcoming draft prospects were playing and balling out. When you look at them on social media, they have not mastered their voice. Many of us in this room still feel awkward if we listen to our own voicemail or ourselves on television in front of a screen. So that's the work to me that needs to be done of what's my positioning statement as an 18-year-old? Those are the conversations. And I was with the top receiver in the country 6 months ago, and he's kicking the ball into the air on Nike's campus and spinning it and not necessarily acting like a pro. And I said, hey, did you listen to my interview with Larry Fitzgerald early in the day? And he said, no, I was on a plane. I said, well, Larry, every time he scores, he hands the ball to the official. Larry was my roommate in college, probably the most professional player in the last 15, 20 years in the National Football League. And he goes, yeah, that's cool, but OBJ is a brand, and he entertains, and I'm here to entertain. Odell Beckham Jr., a top-flight player, just signed a $70 million deal with Nike. He is a brand. Kids are not thinking, I want to be Larry Fitzgerald or Jerry Rice, who were there that day. They're thinking, how can I be a brand? So it has to come from the coaches. That's their job, I think, now, or they're going to get fired based on the social status. But truly managing and guiding and giving some advice to their voice is, to me, where the NFL could really come up big. And, of course, people like ourselves who are still connected to those athletes and individuals like Jeremy.
Awesome. Why, outside of marrying me, was it important to you to, like, really put your money where your mouth is, coming in as the first investor and then going out and talking to, like, other professional past, you know, current or past players and saying, like, this matters. We as athletes have to be the ones carrying this torch. We have to get involved. We have to get invested. What was it about this and Protector as a program that you were so adamant about?
Well, first off, I kind of caught you in the tail end of being kind of really, really hands-on with I Am That Girl. And I showed the and I saw the influence you had on these women and girls and how they listened to you and how they respected you and they wanted to learn more. And I was like, you know what? I think guys could do that, too. Because at the end of the day, we want to be a part of the conversation as much as we kind of separate ourselves from, you know, guys sit on one table and girls sit on the other table. I mean, we're still kind of doing that. I've been to a high school not too long ago. I'm like, it's still going on, but that's exactly what I saw in you, and I, obviously you're very passionate, and I fell in love with you, so it made it that much easier to invest in you. But I knew there was a need for it, and I knew our culture was changing. For example, him talking about Instagram and it being the point of emphasis on how these high school athletes come into college. For example, Mo Bamba here in Austin had a lot of followers coming up, following him before he even got to college. And I was like, holy cow. I looked on his Instagram. I was like, this guy has got so many people following him. And, you know, if you could just bend their ear a little bit and just grab their attention and talk to them about something meaningful and something that could help pave a way for their life. Because if they're a brand, and if someone, you know, if I'm following somebody and I'm looking at them and be like, God, I guess he went through the Protector program. It's like, you can just tell these guys understand it and they're willing to make a conversation out of it. And you're the biggest Tom girl I've ever met in my entire life. So watching you talk about sports and blowing your knowledge way past me sometimes, just like this is important. And if there's somebody that has a key to the locker room, it's got to be you, because you have so much in that brain of yours that you offer these athletes and these young men, you know, that you offer them a chance to understand about girls.
I'd be curious to ask you a question, because depression has become a hot topic in athletics, and the research would suggest that it's doubled in some communities around the country that are in metropolitan areas or major collegiate athletic areas. You talk to these locker rooms all the time. Now it's been, what, 3-4 years you've been doing this. Curious if you've seen the other side of it, of the anxiety, the depression, because we've just had two players, one in Houston at Rice. I don't know the findings that came out, but I believe he took his life. Tyler Holinsky, a quarterback at Washington State, committed suicide about a month and a half ago. I'm curious what you've recognized outside of the education you're providing with Protector.
Sure. Great question. Well, first off, I think that we have to acknowledge that we're dealing with the most overstressed, overmedicated, overscheduled generation that's ever existed before. Right? And because we're not necessarily injecting this emotional education for young people, starting what should be in middle school, starting middle school and high school and college, being able to identify the feelings that they're having. And then when you put them in a fishbowl because of social media. So I always say that growing up as a girl, specifically in America, that we are bombarded with a $40 billion beauty industry, right? That's constantly telling us all the things that we should be and setting an expectation of beauty that is impossible, that is unrealistic, that is unattainable. And so whenever we look at these magazines, we look at the covers of, you know, fill in the blank, we always knew in theory that they were airbrushed, right? But I can only speak for myself. It didn't mean that I didn't still compare myself, even knowing psychologically, like, I know that Victoria's Secret model doesn't really look like that, but like, I would like to look like that anyway, right? And so, you know, I think that what we're realizing now is that we're not just airbrushing pictures and providing, on average, we consume 3,000 brand images every day. Generation Y consumes 10.3 hours of media every day. So when we're looking at the pure consumption and what we're consuming on a regular basis, I think what we're dealing with is, you know, it's why Generation Y is referred to as the teacup generation. You have a generation that's as fragile as teacups, because there's this inflated sense of self that we've created, because we're actually able to create almost this avatar version of ourselves that exists on social media, that is only ever a perfectly curated version of the life in which we want other people to think that we're living. And then worse, we're constantly comparing our lives to the constant social media highlight reel of everyone else's life, and recognizing the flaws and the foibles and all the insecurities and the doubts and the fears that exist within us. And so I think the irony is that we talk about this as though we're talking about these like high school, college kids, like we adults don't struggle with this. We're like, you know, it's a shame they struggle with this stuff, you know, because we don't, as adults, we have it totally figured out. It's like, no, it just becomes more sophisticated, right, with how we deal and how we kind of, I guess, paint over this dilapidated shack that is insecurities, fears, and doubts. So for me, it was interesting. I'll never forget. It was the Elite 11, where it was the bowling alley. Remember when I was with that sweet boy who was like Mr. Blinky?
Yeah.
He kept like blinking.
Yeah. Brandon McElwain.
So precious. Yeah, he's incredible. And so I remember sitting with a group of guys, and to your point, it was like whenever we get done talking for like an hour, then it's like group therapy. Like, I've yet to come to a university, and I've spent 4 years on the road now, 250-plus days a year for 4 years. So I'm like in the trenches with these guys. And the thing that blew my mind is that event, which was my first aha moment of, oh my gosh, in the midst of all the girl empowerment, like rah, 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 like dudes are getting left behind. Like, these young men have nowhere, no outlet, no sanctuary, no safe place to come in and express their fears, doubts, and insecurities the way that we as women do, that there's this predilection inside of female DNA that we're hardwired for community. So it's not weird for me to be like, Claire, can we go get a glass of wine? I'm just having a really hard day, and let's talk about our emotions. Whereas for young men, it's like there's almost this PTSD at this moment in which they were absolutely told that they were not allowed to feel. Right? And maybe it was when they were four and that they were treated differently than their sister. And they're like, no, 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 don't cry. You're tough. You're tough. And so we're so shocked. And I think that's the thing for me that's like, I don't understand why everyone is so like confused about what's happening right now. Because to me, this is absolutely a product of what we have created as a culture. That we have given a definition of masculinity that is directly tethered to specifically in sports. And this is coming from locker rooms themselves, from these young men. When I say, what's the definition of manhood? And they say, be famous, be rich, bang as many girls as you can. Like, that's it. That's, you know, and the majority of them are well on their way to achieving that. And for girls, when you look at what's the definition of womanhood, what are you kind of taught to achieve? And it's like, be rich, be famous, have a perfect body, and like have the right guy, right? Kind of this people-pleasing mentality. So it's like the perfect storm where you have girls with this definition of self that's contingent on the attention that we get from young men, and you have men with a definition of self that's contingent on how many girls they hook up with, and then you throw alcohol and all the other things in the mix, which are just a cover for insecurity, and then it's like a total shit show. And so the thing that blew my mind was when I was sitting there at Elite 11, like we said, it's the top quarterbacks in the entire country, and they're also bizarrely attractive. So that's like almost like this, like, you have to be super hot too. Yeah. Like, I've never understood it. Like, all the quarterbacks at Westlake at our high school were always like so hot. And I was like, is that like a precursor? Do you have to like send in a headshot when you're like, I want to be a quarterback, and here's my headshot. So I'm sitting here with the like biggest, baddest dudes on all their campuses from all over the country. The top 18 of them who are gorgeous, who are successful and big and strong and fast and all these things. And once we opened it up to Q&A and basically where it becomes group therapy for these guys, and they're like, we've never had a place where we could actually like ask these questions. And one of the guys is like, yeah, you know, when you're talking about like respecting women and all these things, he's like, I can't even ask a girl out. And he was by far the most attractive of all of them, like full on was like uncomfortable. Like I had to like look away 9 times because I was like, you're like 18 year old, you know, and I'm sitting here and I'm like, I don't even understand. You're like bizarrely attractive, you know? And he's like, yeah, you know, and I'm thinking in my head, like, you, what do you mean? Like, you have a hard time like asking a girl out? And he's like, yeah, I'm like terrified. He's like, I can't do it. So like I end up like getting a friend if she's in the same room, because this is what's happening with social media and technology right now, is that human beings do not have to engage with each other. They don't have to make eye contact and actually communicate with one another. And it's what I refer to as screen courage, right? You don't even need liquid courage anymore. You have screen courage because you can hide behind something and communicate all you want. And so he was like, yeah, if I'm at a party and I see her across the way, I like get my buddy to go up to her friend to get her number from across the room so that they can start texting. And all I remember thinking was like, if you can't ask chicks out, other dudes are screwed. Like, they don't stand a chance. And so to me, it's less about like sex ed and education. And to me, it's like, why aren't we teaching relationship ed? Why aren't we teaching authentic confidence and how to have ownership over your voice and how to ask a girl out and how, as a girl, if you're not interested, how to communicate that, or if you are interested, how to communicate that? And so kind of bringing this back full circle, which is a question for all of you right now, is what are the solutions, again, a two-part question, that you see within your industry, so within the NFL, like the solutions that you're committed to, that you're like, we feel like these are measurable, we feel like these are things that we can accomplish, that you're doing when you're in locker rooms, that you're doing whenever you're hanging out with Coach Smart and all of the current basketball players at UT, what are the things that you're doing in light of solution, both in your industries and most importantly, individually? I think that's a really important question because after this, I want to open it up to the audience because I really want everyone in this room to feel that you're an agent of change. So what do tangible solutions look like? Not on like the bigger scope, but like that we can walk out of this room individually and say, I have an action item of something I can do to push this conversation forward. Back to the original question. That was a lot.
Yeah.
What are things within your industry that you're seeing as solution-oriented, and or what are solutions that we could even brainstorm right now? And then what in your own life do you think are things that you can do to push the envelope for humanity further, even just even just in a millimeter.
In terms of measurables, it's interesting because, you know, we obviously have statistics every year, and they're on a positive trend in terms of how many of our players are arrested for violent incidents. I try not to pay attention to those because we all know they're going to ebb and they're going to flow, and that to me is not the way that we really know that we're making a difference. The way we know we're making a difference is through organizations like, I know we talked about this a little bit when we prepped, One Love. Some of you may be familiar with them. It was started by the family of Yardley Love, who was the UVA lacrosse player who was killed by her ex-boyfriend now like 7 years ago. And watching them and their trajectory has been really interesting because, like us, they sort of started at straight up domestic violence and sexual assault education. Over the course of, and they work mostly with college athletes. Over the course of time, they realized that it's really easy to hear those terms and be like, doesn't apply, not my life.
Sure.
When they start talking about healthy and unhealthy relationships, everything shifted because every single one of us is engaged in a healthy and an unhealthy relationship, if not now, then at some point in our lives. And I think they had learned that lesson, and I think we've learned that lesson too in terms of, you know, we get an hour a year with players to talk about these issues. It's a very short amount of time. They're football players. Their main goal is to win a Super Bowl. So we really have to, and so I say that because it kind of makes sense that we only get an hour of their time during the crunch time leading up to the season. So we have to maximize that hour. And really, we've evolved over the course of time. Again, I said in the beginning, it was really very basic, you know, these are definitions sort of thing. And then over the course of time, we transitioned to, let's look beyond these specific issues. What is an active bystander? And what are ways that all of us can work on ourselves and figure out how we speak up? And I think the most powerful things we've done is really anecdotal, but having player videos as part of our education. So the one example I'll use, they're all public after a year after we do them, but Benjamin Watson, now with the Ravens, huge guy, intimidating as all get out if you didn't know him. And he did a video that we showed to all players, all league office staff, 6,000 people overall, where he talked about how he was at a gas station and he looked over at a car and he could just tell something wasn't right. And the woman from the car went into the gas station. She went to buy something. And this big, intimidating-looking guy couldn't figure out what to say to her or to the gentleman in the car to say, is everything okay? That's all he wanted to say, and he couldn't do it. And he's very self-aware. He struggled with it. The woman got back into the car. They drove off. And he talks about it as he still doesn't know what the right thing. And that, to me, is what we need more of. Those human moments that we have all experienced that even after 5 years of sitting through this education, our players, and I would include myself, we don't always know what to do. And only by talking about it and sort of crowdsourcing it and using that as a discussion point can we figure out sort of jointly where we go from there.
In real language, like you said, like real language in the real moments that it matters the most, of not necessarily these dramatic situations where like someone is like screaming and being held down, but in these tiny little micro moments throughout the day, how do we give them tools, language of like, this is what you say in those moments, so you have it in your back pocket and you don't have to sit there and wonder, because it's like a 15-second window of bravery opportunity. Gentlemen?
I'm happy to speak. Just to be a role model, I'm pretty far removed from sports now. I'm in commercial real estate at this moment. So I'm trying to, when I go back to the university and watch the younger guys play, just to be a sounding board for them, honestly. I think I've shared the same experience that they had. And it's a different generation, but I still feel like I'm pretty well connected with what they got going on. And honestly, they enjoy asking questions and just looking at their curiosity in their face, be like, hey, you know, what about this? Or, hey, when you did this, and then you kind of instill your knowledge that you had and you pass it on to the next generation. I mean, I do miss athletics for that reason. But I honestly, I feel like she always says, if you preach to the one, I think soon others will follow. And so, I don't know, I just feel if I could be of any help down the road, I'm always there for especially being at the University of Texas, it's near and dear to me. So I kind of now do it in business and ever so often say, hey, man, take it easy. Or try to be a helping hand when I can need it. And being around her a majority of my life now, I kind of, it was funny, about a year ago, speaking to your point there, the other there was a girl that was being, her and her boyfriend were having an issue right over here not too long ago. And you could just tell that they probably had alcohol involved. And
I was like, babe, I don't know what to do. Like, she's like, turn around. I was like, ah, I don't know, they look okay. And so I was like, yeah, well, turn around. And sure enough, like, yeah, she's like, babe, roll down the window. I'm like, okay. Roll down the window. She's like, hey, everything going on all right over there? I was like, God, babe. Can you just speak to them, please? Like, but it took that moment to realize, like, that one half a second, all seriousness, because it, you know, embarrassing. It could have helped that girl's, you know, situation. Be like, hey, this guy could have ran off and said, oh, no, like, someone's, you know, paying attention to this. Or you know, she could have, you know, been taken away. But I just, those moments, as embarrassing as it may seem, could benefit just the slightest. You just never know. But just be aware and... You know, I, like I said, like, she's opened up my eyes to a whole different world and a whole different experience, and to kind of see it from a different lens, and just kind of help push your message.
I think, you know, big picture, it's protector. I mean, that's the answer. That's why it was created. This film that Sarah directed and Alexis is featured in, Brad's in, we're all part of, isn't just a really cool doc that wins awards. I mean, there's curriculum. It's the first of its kind. If you haven't seen it, just go to protector.com and check it out. And this is a proud plug because I've been in locker rooms across the country. Alexis has done that as well, as everyone on this panel has. And we've talked to people that are decision makers with the next generation of leaders and the ones that are going to influence the kids in junior high and the kids that are learning what passive aggressive is. And this offers the first step of actual tools. You know, there's a really rad and entertaining 55-minute film. And then there's four learning modules. And they can be guided by somebody who is uncomfortable at the gas station because you literally give them the step-by-step tools to say, hey, receiver coach or assistant basketball coach or whomever it may be, let's go through it. And to me, that's number one. I mean, that's why it even began. So the answer is literally, here you go, high school coach, whatever community you're going back to, there's a problem there because it's existing across the globe. Do that. And then individually, I live by the phrase, listen like your life depends on it. You know, and I do that as a broadcaster, listening to nonverbal cues when I'm calling a game or to my partner or with my friends or my girlfriend or whoever it may be. And I think the same thing with student athletes. When I go on campus, I literally just ask those questions very simply. How are you feeling? And then I just beat the daylights out of how and why. And kids want to talk. You know, because you're afraid to talk to your coach a lot of the times because your playing time is going to be influenced. One of my mentors is the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, and he'll talk sometimes that players don't want to share a lot of things because it'll probably influence their next contract. And it won't end that program, but an athlete would think that it would. You've dealt with that as a professional athlete for 11 years, yes. You know. So I think it's this, the listening element that is critical, and anybody can lend an ear, whether it's the girl in math class or whether it's the mentor or the mentee. You could do it as a community. You started, that's how you started, Alexis, right? You started that way on SC's campus with a group of 20 women saying, hey, let's just have a conversation. And now it's in over 100 countries, and you're a rock star. Oh, by the way, she's accepting an award tomorrow for one of the most amazing philanthropists and inspired humans on Earth, the Jefferson Award, right, in New York City. So let's give her a round there. It's like that and the Nobel Peace Prize. So one out of two, you're rolling and you're like 30. So congratulations there. But I think those are the two things. Protector, it's a no-brainer. And listen, because kids want to talk. They want to share, a la their mobile device, where they're sharing constantly.
I'm going to open it up, but because we are so blessed to have the so Protector, as he mentioned, is a four-part educational program. There's a 55-minute documentary, feature documentary. It feels like an ESPN 30 for 30. Because we are so blessed to have the director and producer of all of this content here with us, I do want to preface with like a question, if you don't mind, Ms. Sarah Hirsch Bordeaux. She's a filmmaker. She's working on another film right now called We Go Higher, based off of the children who survived of the September 11th situation of their parents who lost parents and loved ones in that. That being said, she also produced and directed a film called A Brave Heart, the Lizzie Velasquez story, which won 9 out of 9 film festivals, actually technically won 10 awards out of 9 film festivals. So she's coming to the table just kind of this incredible storyteller. And one of the things that I think is so unique about you, Sarah, is your ability to take any situation with Lizzie. It really had to do with bullying, with cyberbullying specifically, but also just how do we treat more people with dignity and more respect. Within Protector, it was how do we have a conversation to include men, the through line to all of the things that you do. She also used to run digital at Paramount. So this powerhouse woman, originally from Austin, went to Austin High, no big deal, competitors. but my question for you is, how have you found the power of positive storytelling, and why is that such an integral part of who you are and how you show up in storytelling? Do we have a mic for her?
Sure do.
And just a round of applause for having her.
Yeah.
Hi, you guys. I think for me, and why I got into storytelling at the beginning, is that I think that life is just fucking hard enough. When you are an invited guest as content into an individual's home or phone or laptop, I just wanted to be able to bring something a little more valuable to the table. So I think whether it was bullying or sexual assault, and I'm a rape survivor myself, so coming to the table to do this film and series with Alexis was very personal for me. Not because I was out to criminalize or punish, but simply because I believe in the power of good men. And rather than bring legions of minutes to someone or a festival or to a network that was about talking about more of the problem, I just kind of wanted to bring forward a reminder of what you can become when you can finally see it. So I think for me, that's really my style of filmmaking and storytelling and the choices that I've made. So anyway, thanks.
Be mindful of time and the fact that everyone has a ton of things to go to. We have 13 minutes at least left in this panel, so if there are any questions, you can shout them out from where you are. There's a microphone over there. But anything around these topics, these issues, we're super pumped to open it up. Who's the brave soul who goes first? Yeah, girl.
Yeah,
no, please. Please. Yeah. We can
Everybody
hear?
Everybody can hear?
Yeah.
I'm Laura Fargo. I'm an independent producer and editor based out of Dallas. I'm also the mother of a daughter and a son who both grew up in sports. So I've been interested in youth sports for a long time, just seeing it from a parent perspective and how it gets, the train just gets going so fast and it gets so intense and there's so much expected of these kids in youth sports, and it's just a, like it's an all or nothing type of deal if you want to be a young athlete. So what really bothers me, and it kind of speaks to what you were saying, is that the difference in the way that we treat boys and girls, and this whole hazing thing has got me really concerned. And you kind of see that type of behavior like in high school sports and that thing, and I just don't understand why we aren't taking care of each other. And whether it's the fraternities rushing guys and how different that is, and the girls that are rushing sororities, and it's not really a question, it seems like there's just such a humanity that we're missing out on. And then, by the time we get to the NFL, that's such a late time to be trying to address all these issues.
One thing I will say is that Brad's brother, my brother-in-law, who's only 17 months older than Brad, his name is Ben, he was so bullied his freshman year in high school at Westlake, where we both grew up here, that your mom made a really specific decision, to your point, made a really specific decision and had Brad go to a private school for his freshman year and then came back to Westlake in order to go to sports. But I think you can speak to that better than anyone, as far as...
Yeah, that was the scariest part of me going to Westlake in general. It was, you're the new guy, you're the fresh meat that is coming to a new school, and if you're a good athletics and you're going to compete against the upperclassmen, they're going to try to make you feel like you're not good enough. And so, in return, they haze you. So that, for me, I was like, I don't have time for that. And so my mom made an incredible decision to put me in a place where I was going to, be in a position to better myself and not go to a school that was going to keep knocking me down. And it just happened to work out that way, whether it's, in your circumstances is a good idea or not. I was lucky to have seniors take me on like I was a senior. And there was no hazing whatsoever. And so for me, understanding that led to, when I was a senior, to taking care of the younger classmen, because I had the respect enough as a freshman that I wanted to emulate that again to the next generation. So it's honestly, it starts, like you mentioned, the NFL is too late, but yet there it's a moment for them to capitalize on their fame and their success to help the next generation carry that torch. You know what I mean?
Well, to your point, I think, you know, in your example of seniors sort of taking you on, I think looking back to what happened a number of years ago at the, in the Dolphins locker room with a serious bullying situation with Jonathan Martin, what existed was a leadership vacuum. There was a void of leadership. And so when you talk about those seniors taking you on, that's what was leadership in that locker room. One of the leaders was the bully. So what do you do when that's the dynamic? You need other leaders to step in and say, wait.
Yeah.
And it was an eye-opening wake-up call for all of us. I know, speaking specifically about the Dolphins, as a result, their owner started this amazing organization called RISE. I don't know if any of you are familiar with it. It's all about promoting equality across the board, gender, racial. It's amazing. But point being, sometimes, unfortunately, you do need those wake-up calls as an organization. But I really think a lot of it comes down to, just like we need to educate coaches, who are the leaders in those locker rooms among the players that are going to, and it's a hard thing, right? Yeah. We all know, I, with my boys, I think about, you know, what will I show them before they go to college? And right now in my head, it's the hunting ground and the recent story out of Rutgers about that poor young man who died because nobody in the frat called 911.
Yeah. I think that's pretty, it's pretty interesting when you look at what athletes can do. If you're a college football fan this year, three freshmen have played for the national title over the last 2 years. Alexis has talked to all three, Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, and Jake Fromm from Georgia and Alabama respectively. And what athletes have now, when they were different than us, is they've got the internet and tools. You can watch Tom Brady, Tom versus Time, and learn what it's like to be a real guy and really train and be committed to your craft. You can listen to Dr. Michael Gervais' podcast called Finding Mastery on the mental skills in human performance. You can watch Protector. So the tools are there for kids. If I was a parent with my potential children, those are some things I'd be arming them and arming the coaches with. Because the coaches, sometimes they're getting paid $2,500 for the year. They don't have a lot of time. They may not have the resources. But giving them the tools, I'd love the NFL to continue to develop the work that they're doing of literally handing us the tools, as you're doing already with the youth programs, mm-hmm. Play 60, et cetera, that you guys have done, but continually blowing that out. And then Trent Dilfer, the head coach of League 11, does an amazing thing that I'm stealing with my kids, is when they sit in the car next to them after a game, they have a rule that they've talked about. All right, if you want me to talk about the game, turn your hat around backwards. If you don't, keep it on board. So the kid doesn't have to say. They can just turn around, and dad can then be like, all right, so what was that about? Or he knows, I ain't going there. Like, you don't want to even do that right now. And I think some of those communicative skills are critical for this generation, because they're better communicators by trade with the device, poor communicators by skill, but a desire to communicate is probably 10x what it was when we were growing up.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
When I was a kid, masculinity and like vulnerability were like polar opposites, and especially in locker rooms. And you guys have been in locker rooms more recently. I'm wondering if you see masculinity changing and evolving since the time when you guys were kids and in locker rooms. Is that something that's already kind of in the works? Do you see a shift?
Great question.
From my personal experience, I think Yogi's got a little more perspective than I do. He's in multiple locker rooms currently, but with the current University of Texas coach right now, Shaka Smart, he's done a good job of bringing vulnerability to the forefront, and he kind of asks questions to his players, and for example, he's got a coach that coaches him, which also coaches the players. For, you know, if some kid's moping around and, you know, is not happy with how he's playing, he's got the guy to kind of bring him up and ask questions and say, hey, are you okay? How can we fix this? So I think for my, you know, perspective of being at University of Texas, they're doing what they need to be done to help the younger generation out. But I think it goes to more of a your question, because I'm sure there's changed quite a bit since you've been around multiple offenses.
Yeah, I mean you as well, Alex.
Yeah.
I do think that when it goes bad, we got to hammer them. You know, Michigan State, gymnastic situation we just saw. The NFL, I firmly believe that if a player is convicted of domestic or sexual violence, they should never be allowed to wear a jersey again. You can walk the streets and get a job and have a life, but you don't get to be the role model to a 12-year-old ever again, because those kids will do OBJ's dance move in the end zone. They will do everything that they watch you and perceive you to be their idol. So I think there's an element there which is probably a little awkward to talk about, but I think you have to remain steadfast and strong when there's issues there. But to the vulnerability aspect, players want to talk about those elements, and the discussion has totally shifted because of the work Alexis and Sarah have done and with the National Football League. It's shifted because it's gone from, I'm only allowed to cry after a win or a loss, to, okay, like it's cool to be Russell Wilson and be a badass husband. Even if my wife's a celebrity, but he's promoting and sharing that to his brand voice, and people are understanding that that's the thing to do. LeBron did it 3 years ago. He changed his entire campaign strategy because they did a word cloud search, and it was selfish, arrogant, him first. And they said, when you change it, every commercial after that was what? Him running with everybody in the community at Nike, right? It was his kids on the bed with Samsung, I believe it was. And his brand changed. So guys are getting that the vulnerability element, A, is cool, but B, will also help them influence the people that will be admiring them.
Yeah, so you answered part of my question already. I was building on his question. How far do you also reach out to brands like Nike and the sponsors or media outlets, and how they, because the images that get out there, it's a choice of like what pictures of the players get out, how Nike, what kind of athletes they're sponsoring, how conscious they are about the brand they want to be, and how far do you go when talking about how, because I just feel that there might be a disconnect if you want to change the way like men feel about masculinity and how they want to be as men, but then the system and what it rewards with money and with fame and attention is then still perpetuating the old values, and there's this like crushing, or I don't know, this like fraction in the system. So how do you work with other organizations or with media companies or sponsors in order to advocate for that different perspective on masculinity as well?
I think one of the cool things, you just nailed it, is the fact that, and this is a great problem because I'm always like, I don't care what your motives are, right? When a guy like Russell Wilson finds me and somehow I get a personal email from Russell saying, hey, the work that you're doing with Protector is amazing. How do I get involved? I care about this. You know, CR, like my wife is like my everything. I have a son coming into the world. Like, can you send me a hat? Can you send me? I think it's almost the inverse. I think rather than saying, let's go to Nike, let's go even to the NFL and be like, hey, NFL, you should be doing X, Y, and Z. What's so inspiring to me, and this is my personal experience, is the athletes themselves, which we always know, right? Gandhi's onto something. He was a smart dude. This idea that you have to embody that, which you want to see in the world. And I think that in speaking to millennials specifically, it is such a generation of hopeless optimists who want to see the world get better. And so I feel that I get to stand in a place of such optimism because of the Russells of the world coming to me saying, this really matters to me. I want to get involved. And then it's so much easier to go to the league, to go to Nike and be like, hey, Russell cares about this and says he really wants to be involved. So look, it's a win-win for everyone. The NFL isn't mad about, you know, their athletes wanting to jump on a bandwagon to say, like, we're great dudes and we want to be celebrated for that. Nike's not angry about dudes saying, like, we really respect women and can we put some cool t-shirt or, you know, or merch out into the... Of course it's a win-win for everyone, but I think rather than viewing it, how far do we go, and by we, I'll speak as an activist, how far do I go? I'm not a fan ever of telling anyone what they should be doing. I don't think that's an effective or inspiring narrative. My thing is, if we can present a new reality that's possible, then let's see who jumps on board, you know, and to see the athletes themselves doing it, it's really exciting because then it's almost like I don't have to make an ask.
Go ahead. Well, a beautiful thing when Alexis has come into these quarterback meetings the last couple of years, we kind of tag team it, and I started in the beginning, and we asked them, how many of you have sent or favorited anything inappropriate over the last 2 years? And you could do this at home with your children or the kids that you're around. And they all say, I'm clean. And then we do a little social media deep dive and be like, well, you're following 17 porn stars. You favorited or unretweeted. And we literally can dive into the metrics of their social, of their voice. And then they're like, damn. And then I'm like, imagine what a GM in the National Football League or the NBA is going to do. And I think to the specificity of solutions, which is the point of this conversation, showing them what they're doing of their actions. And then it's like, oh yeah, I don't want to reflect that.
For me, it's one of my favorite phrases, know what you don't know. And I think we've done that really well around these topics. What we've said to our sponsors and to our media partners is learn from our mistakes. We screwed up in a very public way. we're not telling you what to do, but here's everything we learned in terms of how to talk about these issues, the language you use. So shortly after Ray Rice reinstituted, we made available for all of our media partners, we brought in experts independently of us to talk about how you talk about these issues. We did the same thing at our broadcast boot camp, which is for players who are looking to transition into broadcasting. The difference between referring to something as a mistake instead of as a crime, or referring to something as a murder-suicide instead of calling it what it was, which is a domestic violence, things like that, those nuances, we haven't nailed it, but at the same time, we went through sort of trial by fire, learn from our mistakes. Doesn't mean we've gotten it all right, but at least here's what we've learned.
Mm-hmm. And I will say just a quick personal thing with my experience with Roger. The first time I ever met him, we were in an event together, and when I got done giving a presentation on Protector, he came into the back room. He could have left. Like, he didn't have to be there. He didn't have to stay for my presentation. He stayed for the entire thing. He's a busy man. It was 2 days before the Super Bowl. And he came back into the green room, gave me a huge hug, and was like, you don't understand. Like, I'm not talking to you as the commissioner right now. Like, I have two daughters, and I have 17 nieces. So, like, when I say that I'm talking to you as a father and I'm talking to you as an uncle, like, I'm saying that this doesn't just matter to me because it should matter to the NFL. This matters to me as a human. And so what I have to, whatever I have to do to support and make sure that, like, you know, of course it's an incredible platform. So I will say, like, it has been a privilege so far, my experience, because there has been so much humility of, we're not pretending like we have it all figured out, and we're not pretending like we haven't made mistakes. And that's all you could ever ask of any organization or individual. So I think... I'm continuing to be excited and inspired about future partnerships.
We got one
more question, and then we'll rock and roll, because I want to be respectful of everyone's time.
I'm developing a TV show about toxic masculinity in sports, and my question is there any way that pop culture, particularly mass media like television, can help support this cause? Are there touch points that... I can take back to my team and cover.
Yep, 13 Reasons Why. So we partnered with them, with I Am That Girl and Protector, and the new storyline that they're coming out with for season 2 is all about toxic masculinity and, more importantly, redemption. And I think that being able to highlight, like, if you're going to highlight the stereotype of, like, the douchebag, meathead, right, which, like, is a compelling individual, compelling storyline, how do we balance that with, to the original question about vulnerability, how do we balance that with vulnerability? How do we balance that with someone else who's emulating and offering even the simple phrase which Yogi coined, which was, in that scene, right, that you're building out where guys are being douchebags and whatever, is there a scene where there's one guy brave enough to say the simple phrase, we don't do that? Right? Because that's language. That is a tangible, hard stop, and at the same time holding people lovingly accountable, not by saying you shouldn't be doing that, but by saying, guys, come on, we're better than that. And so for me, it's like, how do you personify the idea that courage is now being redefined? It's not just your willingness to put your life on the line, that courage is in fact the willingness to put your vulnerability on the line. And how do you have, like, the most popular guy in school being able to lead with that amount of bravery? I think that being able to show dynamic characters like that outside of the stereotypes, and also showing, like, badass women. I'm a huge fan. We were talking about this before, and if there's, like, one big takeaway, we were like, this is not a guy problem, this is not a girl, this is not a women's movement, this is a human movement, and it's never required all of us the way that it does right now, especially having kind of taboo conversations about being honest.
Thank you.
I'm thrilled. I'm so interested to know more about your show. But anything else? Is there any last takeaways you want to throw out?
Have the conversation, you know? I mean, just like when we were coming up, we didn't know how to ask out girls. We didn't know anything. You know, we still don't, for the most part.
We watched the film.
Yeah,
so
but I truly believe that it's that. You know, it's having the conversation, because it doesn't happen enough, or it happens too late. And that, we've seen that, and that's played itself out, and that needs to end. And it's a hard and awkward discussion, but the real guys, the Chris Petersons of the world, they're having it. David Shaw's the world dedicated an entire game to Protector and setting the expectation. It just happened in Minnesota's going to do a game like that. You're going to see 8 schools in the Pac-12 do that this fall. I mean, having those combos will influence those kids, and you just got to keep coaching them.
Yep, and my last takeaway is, if you have relationships with your past university or high school, get Protector on the radar. It is available. You can go to protector.com. It is a tangible education preventative medicine for these schools. Let's stop having the conversations after the fact and being reactionary. Let's shift our culture to being a culture that is proactive about things and is interested in stopping it before we have to have these conversations.
No one wants another Baylor.
No one wants another Baylor.
Amen.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank y'all so much.